Page 185, Part 2, Aesthetic Theory in Cultural Criticism, The Concept of Culture. There is a star after this. First four sections by Andrew Arato, last section by Eike Gebhardt. Return to text. The concept of culture is significantly ambiguous in normal usage. More often than not, culture is represented as the total sum of activities that possess the aura of intellectuality or spirituality, that is, the arts and the sciences. But there is also an important usage, especially but not only in the social sciences, that defines culture as the ensemble of those intersubjective traditions, meanings, values, institutions, rituals, customs, and typical activities characteristic in space and time of a given social formation. The ambiguity has been noticed by the Frankfurt School, even if the brunt of their critical concern focuses on culture in the first sense. Footnote 1, text. The two concepts of culture may, in fact, be related to one another. In the history of sociology and social theory, no one did more to elaborate a comprehensive and dynamic concept of culture than the turn of the century, German thinker Georg Simmel. Footnote 2, text. Drawing heavily, if implicitly, on Hegel and Marx, Simmel defined all culture as human self-creation in the context of cultivating things or self-cultivation in the process of endowing the things of nature with use and meaning. However, for Simmel, the self-cultivation, subjective culture of individuals and the cultivation of things, objective culture, by ensembles of individuals are neither parallel nor harmonious. He postulated a gradually and linearly increasing division of labor as the red thread of history that leads not only to the powerful growth of objective culture, but also to the corresponding one-sidedness, deformation, and overspecialization of individuals, that is, to the crises of subjective culture. Page 186. True, subjective culture was to Simmel the cultivation of the whole personality, and also, this is ambiguous in his work, Simmel's restriction of the achievement of totalization to the great cultural forms, art, philosophy, theology, historiography, and science did imply the highly privileged and philosophically preferable nature of some human activities. Footnote 3, text. That is what Marxists more than 50 years before had called mental work. Thus, Simmel systematically related culture in the narrow sense of intellectual self-cultivation and culture in general, the objectification and externalization of all human activities. He defined the relationship of the two in terms of an increasing split that he called the tragedy of culture. Marx wrote nothing on culture as such. Indeed, his methodological remarks on the dependence of superstructure on the base and, in particular, the forms of consciousness on the contradictory structure of a mode of production have generally been interpreted by Marxists as reason enough to disregard the epiphenomena of culture. However, much of Frankfurt cultural theory begins with one singularly fruitful distinction of Marx's, that between mental and manual labor. In distinction to almost all bourgeois theories of the division of labor, including Simmel's, for Marx, the division of labor proper begins with the separation of mental and manual labor, and moreover presupposes private property and therefore the beginning of the contradiction between the interest of the separate individual or family and the communal interest of all individuals, now in the alienated form of the state. Footnote 4, text. In this complex, mental labor, private property, and the state are on the same side. From this point on, according to Marx, consciousness, that is, mental labor, can flatter itself as being independent of the social life process through the forms of consciousness, continue to belong to the complex of the division of labor, and hence possesses neither independent life nor history. Aside from its illusory self-representation, consciousness or mental labor continues to represent in an illusory manner, generally on the side of real powers, the real struggle of the world, even the post-Christian dreams of universality, liberty, and equality express both world historical potentialities brought about by the development of a universally interdependent and highly productive system of civil society, and the cultural ideological illusions that mask the particularity, unfreedom, and inequality of class rule. Footnote 5, page 187. Thus, Marx located culture in the narrow sense in terms of mental labor, whose pretensions he criticized. He also had a concept corresponding to the more general concept of culture, for which he used the term mode of production or social formation interchangeably. We will follow one of his usages and refer to culture in general as social formation. The concept of mental work marks the limits of the Frankfurt concept of culture, both in the narrow sense of high culture and also in its popular and mass substitutes. At times, the passionate hatred of critical theory toward what Marcuse calls affirmative culture, that is, the mode of high culture, that in spite of its utopian anticipations, suppresses its relationship to the social life process, surpassed that of Marx. The products of art and science owe their existence not merely to the efforts of the great geniuses that created them, but also to the unnamed drudgeries of their contemporaries. There is no document of culture which is not at the same time a document of barbarism. Footnote 6, text. Thus, wrote Walter Benjamin in a 1937 text reproduced below, but lest we assign the argument to his lonely and idiosyncratic position within or without the school, let us quote from Adorno in 1966. All post-Auschwitz culture, including its urgent critique, is garbage. In restoring itself after the thing that happened without resistance in its own countryside, culture has turned entirely into the ideology it had been potentially, had been ever since it presumed in opposition to material existence to inspire that existence with the light denied it by the separation of mind from manual labor. Footnote 7, text. The quotation represents what Adorno himself called transcendent critique of culture, an attack from an imaginary point of reference outside culture, since for most Marxists and even for the sociology of knowledge, the theoretical key to cultural or superstructural phenomena lies in investigating the conflicts, contradictions of the social economic base that supposedly subordinates culture to the interest of a given ruling class. These modes of cultural analysis, including Marx's own in the German ideology, also falls under the heading of transcendent or external critique. The danger also present in the above quotation is that transcendence critiques, wishing to wipe away the whole as if with a sponge, develop an affinity to barbarism. Page 188. On the other hand, the opposite mode of procedure, the one Adorno usually practiced, immanent critique, faces the danger of loving immersion in the object criticized. Footnote 8, text. Even the above lines from Negative Dialectics about Auschwitz and culture end, therefore, with an ambiguous formulation. Whoever pleads for the maintenance of this radically culpable and shabby culture becomes its accomplice, while the man who says no culture is directly furthering the barbarism which our culture showed itself to be. Footnote 9, text. The dialectical critique of culture is forbidden either to celebrate autonomous mind or to hate it. The critique must both participate in culture and not participate. Footnote 10, text. While the main Frankfurt theorists of culture, Adorno, Benjamin, Horkheimer, Marcuse, and Löwenthal, indeed moved between these poles, or better still, attempted to indicate the missing tertium through criticizing each pole, no secure single meaning of dialectical culture critique emerges from their works. The various answers which emerge from critical theories' confrontation with and involvement in culture had to negotiate not only between the poles of transcendent and immanent critique, other dualities or antinomies in Kant's sense, contrary positions which could be more or less equally defended by logical arguments, quickly appeared. Its culture, in the narrow sense, to be considered as a sphere of autonomous ends in themselves, or as a socially, politically, economically fungible subsphere in which even the useless become useful, is there more truth latent in the ideologies of high culture or in those of mass culture? Should the critique concentrate on works or on the production and reception of products? Are politically radical works more or less critical of the existing world than autonomous works? Are the works of the past or the present the repositories of utopia? Is the reintegration of mental and manual labor of art and life the content of a positive utopia of liberation or of a negative administered one? The answers vary from author to author, from article to article, and even at times within the same circle. In 1936, Marek Horkheimer concentrated on the role of culture, including high culture, in producing legitimating beliefs for political domination. Footnote 11, text. In 1941, he stressed instead, following Kant, the critique of instrumental reason latent in the purposelessness of genuine works. Footnote 12, text. Page 189. In a 1937 article, Herbert Marcuse criticized the survival of affirmative culture in the present, hoping for its revolutionary abolition. In another, he focused on the utopian contents of the affirmative culture of the past. Footnote 13, text. And much later in his Essay on Liberation, 1969, he called once again for the reintegration of culture and life through the abolition of art and the aestheticization of daily life and work, only to claim still a few years later in Counter-Revolution and Revolt, 1972, the need to protect autonomous works even in the future. And most important, Walter Benjamin and Theodor Adorno, two close friends, engaged in a set of controversies in the 1930s about art, mass culture, and politics, in which Adorno used Benjamin against Benjamin and Benjamin as we will see, could have used Adorno the sociologist against Adorno the philosopher of art. In the context of such diversity,